40 people crammed into a 9-meter boat. Pirates stripped them naked. A baby dangled over churning water. A teenager jumped overboard in delirium. Yet, decades later, the survivors of this harrowing journey would tell their story not with bitterness, but with humor and gratitude. How does a family transform unimaginable trauma into joy? The answer lies in resilience, hope, and an almost defiant optimism, qualities that carried the Du family from Vietnam's communist oppression to Australia's shores, and eventually to the Sydney Opera House stage. Their journey proves that survival is just the beginning. What matters is how you choose to live afterward. In 1980, Ondo's parents risked everything for freedom, buying a black market boat despite threats of death. 40 people, including 2-year-old An and baby Hua, departed through separate routes to avoid detection. His mother stuffed rice in Hua's mouth to silence him. Australia welcomed them with bewildering generosity. 2 nuns brought a garbage bag of clothes, a treasure for An's mother, who had owned only 2 pairs of pants her entire life. The family marveled at free healthcare, unemployment benefits, and neighbors like Miss Book, who helped with paperwork and sewed a lace dress for the baby's christening. An's father, geographically confused, had collected warm clothes, thinking Australia was near Switzerland. They landed in Sydney during 30-degree heat. They moved into a garment factory where they both lived and worked, with 6 children often sharing 1 bed. His mother's charitable nature meant their home always sheltered relatives and strangers. His grandmother transformed every backyard into a Saigon-style garden, cracking open VB beers and singing karaoke. His father's entrepreneurial dreams led to purchasing a duck farm on 7 acres of waterfront property. For 2 years, holidays meant roaming marshlands and fishing from an auction-bought dinghy. But contaminated feed killed thousands of ducks overnight. With interest rates hitting 18% in 1989, the farm sold at massive loss. His parents returned to sewing clothes in their living room, but the financial collapse triggered something far more devastating than poverty. Ein's father was an eternal optimist with unshakable self-belief, until life broke him. After losing everything, the factory, houses, land, he could have recovered financially. What destroyed him was losing his brother's trust and unbearable guilt. His uncle had left Vietnam 6 months earlier, taking 3 brothers. Pirates attacked and sank their boat. 2 uncles perished. Ein's father blamed himself for not being on that boat, convinced he could have saved them. He spiraled into heavy drinking and violence. During Ein's early teens, his father struck him in drunken rages with wild, painful blows. At 13, Ein fought back, pushing his father into a wall. His defiance shocked his father more than the blow itself. Soon after, his father began disappearing for weeks. Eventually, his mother announced he'd gone to Vietnam. "I can't have him being violent towards you kids." Ein hid the largest kitchen knife under his bed. One night, his father returned. Ein locked his siblings in the toilet and answered the door. When his father demanded to see his mother, Ein refused and went for his knife. When he returned, his father was sobbing, something he'd never seen before. His father turned and walked away. Ein didn't see him again for the rest of his childhood. At St. Aloysius, an elite school with the motto, "Born for Greater Things," An discovered what privilege looked like and how poverty felt when you're the only one without it. Even with half scholarships for both brothers, their single mother struggled with astronomical fees. To save money, she bought oversized uniforms that could last years. By year 10, this strategy failed spectacularly when An wore his brother's old jacket, modified with sleeve extensions from mismatched fabric. At his year 10 graduation ceremony in Sydney's Grand Town Hall, receiving an academic prize, An kept his arms crossed on stage, desperately hiding the two-toned jacket that screamed poverty. In that moment of achievement, imagined judgment consumed him rather than pride. Textbooks cost nearly $1,000 for both brothers, an impossible sum. An developed elaborate coping strategies, borrowing books from his friend Phil between classes, hovering his pen above Phil's workbook to appear as if completing exercises. on days Phil was absent and claimed forgetfulness rather than admit the truth. Watching his mother work herself to exhaustion, Anne fabricated a story midway through year 10 about hating St. Aloysius, suggesting a transfer to public school. Despite his success as student council representative and strong academics, his mother refused. She saw education as the key to their future, worth any immediate hardship. In his fourth year, Anne interviewed with top firms, including Anderson Consulting. After their intense three-day retreat, he realized he hated the competitive, fake environment. Though offered a position requiring 60-65 weekly hours, that night at a comedy gig, he asked professional comedian Dave Grant how many hours he worked, just 4 to 6 weekly, earning $50,000 to $100,000. Anne chose comedy over corporate life. When he told his mother, who didn't even know comedy was a profession, she simply asked if he thought he could do it, then gave her blessing. He performed relentlessly, 6 or 7 gigs weekly at any venue, for free, for $50, $20, beer, or even a cheeseburger. After about a year, he won the Harold Park Hotel's Comedian of the Year Award. He entered the Green Faces competition with a $5,000 prize, determined to win for his sister Tram, who rarely smiled due to dental problems. When announced winner, he immediately called his mom and Tram, who had stayed up waiting. That night, he slept with the cash envelope under his pillow. His stand-up led to hosting Rush TV, then acting opportunities. With regular TV income, he qualified for a home loan and bought a 4-bedroom house. His mother could only repeat, "Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful," through tears. He wrote and starred in Footie Legends, backed by Mel Gibson's company. His brother directed, his mother acted, his sister photographed, and his wife played a nurse. At 22, Ong reconnected with his father after 9 years. At their second meeting, his father prepared an elaborate feast and revealed a brain tumor. His deepest wish? To reunite with An's siblings and tell them he loved them. Their 1998 Vietnam journey carried profound significance. Landing triggered sensory memories, street food aromas, incense, tropical air. They witnessed stark poverty, with his mother giving about $5 Australian to each person, an amount that could feed families for days. At a temple, they encountered a malnourished teenage postcard seller. His mother observed, "This is An's skinnier twin." He realized this could have been his fate. Today, his mother has stopped decades of manual labor to care for grandchildren and pursue her dream of mastering English. At An's Sydney Opera House performance, when he announced her presence during a heartfelt segment about her life, every person rose in spontaneous standing ovation. Looking at his mother's tear-streaked face, An cried all over the Opera House microphone. His mother discovered her own spotlight, becoming a sought-after guest chef, commanding $2,000 per appearance. At home, An finds his greatest joy in his wife, Susie, and their 3 boys. When Xavier asked if his father had been to the moon, An channeled his own father's belief. "You do that, Xavier. You do that 'cause you can do anything." In 2011, The Happiest Refugee received Australian Book of the Year, which An dedicated to his mother. Their story validates his father's philosophy that there are only 2 times in life. There's now, and there's too late.